us wherever you are. If you're joining us on television here in the Santa Barbara, California area, we welcome you at TBSB and so many of you joining us around the world at all these different places, the YouTube channel and our website, goodlifetelevision.org, and also on the podcast. You can search any podcast platform at Good Life Conversations and you can find us. And those new episodes drop every week, and so we're so grateful that you're with us, and grateful for Bunnin Chevrolet, who presents the program, and our friends there, and it's so fun every week to be able to talk with great people and talk about the good stuff, and even the tough stuff, even the stories where there's redemption, stories where there's overcoming. It's amazing, and so we're trying to dwell on and celebrate these good things, and we're so glad that you're along for the ride with us. I'm really grateful for my guest today. An amazing story. Kimberly Shannon Murphy is with me. Welcome.
Thank you.
Kimberly is a Hollywood stunt woman. I could say it's the first Hollywood stunt woman we've had on the program. And she's had some amazing experience in that world. Top Gun, Maverick, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, some of these movies that you've heard of, Kimberly has done those. And then what's amazing about this story is Kimberly's story, which we're going to get into. And she's written a book, and it's called Glimmer. It came out just a few months ago. It's called Glimmer, a story of survival, hope, and healing. And we're going to talk about that as well. But let's start kind of with... You grew up in New York and you ended up coming to California and kind of back and forth. But tell us a little bit about your upbringing. And I know that a lot of it obviously relates to what you've written here and this painful journey you've been on. So let's just kind of get into it in terms of, you know, what happened. And then we'll kind of fast forward in terms of how this is, how you've processed it and so forth. But take us back to when you were young.
I was raised in Long Island, New York, and my mother was a stay-at-home mom, and my father was a Mason, and he was a Vietnam vet, and my mother's father was a pedophile, rapist, sociopath, and abused my mom her whole life along with all of her siblings. And when I came into the world, they weren't dealing with any of it or talking about any of it. And in turn, I was abused by him until he died when I was 11. So my whole childhood.
How does that happen in a family, like with your mom and all the siblings? So like, no one ever told anyone. I mean, this was just something you didn't talk about? Is that
correct? Yeah. My aunt, the one who I speak a lot about in the book, who is no longer with us, but she spoke up when she was 9 years old and told her mother that this was happening to her. And my grandmother approached my grandfather about it. He denied it, and that was that. My grandfather was a very powerful man. He was an architect. Well, I thought he was an architect and found out recently that he actually lied about being an architect, but was a very persuasive person, and he worked for an architectural firm, and the man who owned it kind of took him under his wing, and when he passed away, he left him the firm. So my grandfather just pretended that he was an architect and worked his whole life as an architect when he wasn't actually an architect. And made a ton of money and was really successful, and no one ever questioned him about anything.
Wow. So he dies when you're 11.
Yeah.
And so when you're going through something like that, I mean, so does it just completely change your mind so much that you can't, like I'm trying to imagine this, like, did you address it with him, or did you ever say anything to him like, this is...
Not with him, no. He made it very clear, if I ever said anything, that he would kill me. And he tried to on many occasions, or at least I felt like he would kill me. Like, there were situations that he tried to suffocate me, And whether he would have went through with it or not as a child, I feared that he would have. And so that really just kept me quiet because I was scared for my life. I was also very just confused in general with how, what my life was and how I was brought over to my grandparents. And especially in that time, in that generation, you're very much taught to like respect your elders, and these are your family members and your grandparents and your, you know, and you don't question anybody. You right. just, that's, so that was my life. And I didn't question anybody, even though I knew it was wrong and I was terrified. I never said anything until after he died.
So he threatened you?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And at one point you talked to your mom.
Yes.
And was that before he died?
No, it was after he died.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what did you say? What did she say?
I was 15 and I was sort of trying to cope with everything I sort of knew to be true, but was extremely confused as how, as I still am, as how this type of abuse happened under everybody's nose right. and nobody did anything about it. But it just shows you how generations of abuse that are passed on, how dysfunctional families sort of just operate in this way, and that this is the way that it is, and no one protects the children or the people that should be protected. And so when I was 15, I finally said something to my mom because it was sort of becoming way too much for me to keep inside anymore.
I can imagine. Yeah. So you talked to her, and then at that point she told you that happened to me too.
Yes.
So you didn't know that until that point?
Correct.
So do you think she knew, or?
I think when you're being abused, especially by somebody that is supposed to love you, there's a disconnection that happens in our body. And there's so much now like science around all of it. And you know, there's so many doctors that I connected with while writing my book that endorsed my book, Gabor Mate being one of them. He's one of the top trauma doctors in the world. That you disconnect from your body. You literally, your brain shuts off and you leave your body in order to sort of just get through with this horrific thing that's happening to you. And so it manifests itself in your body, but your brain and your body are almost like two separate entities. And, you know, when you sort of come to terms with it and doing all the work around it is sort of, I think, marrying those two things together again, that for me were never together. I don't think I was ever in my body. It started when I was 3 years old. So I don't think I ever really was connected to myself or knew what that meant or even who I actually was. And that's how I always truly felt.
I think it's hopefully there's, the world is kind of awakening to this pedophilia thing.
Yes.
Like that's a very, very dark part of our world that I don't think has been talked about nearly enough. I mean, I think the average person, if you just said this is going on, it almost sounds like, no way. Mm-hmm. I mean, even you saying that to me right now, saying it started when I was three, mm-hmm. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't seem human mm-hmm. that this could happen.
It's not.
it's really not. So, but we have to look at it.
Yeah.
Because it's real. Mm-hmm. I mean, just this movie that came out this year and some of the stuff around trafficking and, mm-hmm. and like I think it's good. I think light is the great disinfectant. Mm-hmm. I mean, and at the same time, incredibly painful.
Yeah. Which is why I think that it's not spoken about so much. I mean, interfamilial abuse, which is what they sort of call it now, you know, people that are abused as children, 95% of them is by a family member or by somebody that the family knows, which is like a massive number.
Yeah.
And people don't talk about it because there's so much shame around it. And that's exactly why I wrote the book and why I decided to come out and speak on it, is because nobody really does. And I get why. It's extremely painful.
Yeah.
And, you know, me writing my book, no one in my family talks to me anymore. Because I'm
what?
Speaking the truth about what happened. It was really interesting how it all happened. And all of my doctors sort of said that that was what was going to happen when I was getting my endorsements for my book. And they said, are you still talking to your family? And I said, some of my sisters, I have three sisters. They're not all in the book. I only have one sister in the book as just sort of like a fictitious character. My one sister, when I got the book deal, just stopped talking to me completely. And my second sister was close behind her. And my parents, I sort of walked away on my own because it was becoming, because when you're living in a family where this is all you know, this is your reality, you sort of make it okay because what's the other alternative? You don't have a family. Like the people that you were born into, that you're attached to, that are supposed to take care of you, if you walk away from them, you're technically like alone.
Yeah.
Once I wrote the book, and once I had one of my actresses read the book for me, she did the audiobook because it was too difficult for me to read it out loud. And hearing her read my story, for the first time, I felt exactly the way you feel hearing my story. But I never felt that way before. I, you know, hearing my words back to me, I felt like, how on earth did this happen to me? How on earth did my entire family not know? Because that was everybody's answer. We just didn't know. Like, we didn't know. We're so sorry. You know, my dad's always said to me, if I knew, I would have killed him. And I always took that as like a response that was okay with me. I was like, no, I know, Dad, it's okay. Now I'm at a point where I'm like, well, why didn't you know? Because all of it happened when everyone was in the house. This wasn't like I went on vacations with them and I was alone with them. I wasn't. It happened on Christmas. It happened on, you know, Thanksgiving and Easter and all of the things. So it's become impossible for me to live
that.
Like a healthy life with like my husband and my daughter that I created and still be in communication with the people that left me so broken.
So do your sisters think you're lying about all this?
No.
Then
not
why,
at all.
Why won't they talk to you?
They were all abused.
But okay, but why won't they talk to you?
Because they're dealing with their trauma in a different way than I'm dealing with my trauma. In their eyes, me writing the book is going to ruin all of our children's lives, were the words from my sister.
Ah.
So they're afraid that by me speaking about our family, because they don't want their kids to know, they don't want to talk about it, which is how we got here in the first place.
Right.
That's what they genuinely feel. And I'm not angry with them about it. I think they're coping the best way that they know how to cope. But I just don't think it's the right way to cope. And I don't think that's how you break cycles that are so necessary to break in my family. And it takes something like this to do that. And it's not easy. This hasn't been easy for me to do. And navigate my daughter through all of this has been really, really hard. But I know that when she's older, I can say that I did things different.
Yeah, yeah. It's very courageous. I naming something, I think, is so powerful. I'm not a psychologist, but there's something about naming it, saying mm-hmm. it out loud.
Yeah.
That yes is very uncomfortable, especially for the people who were involved.
Mm-hmm.
But sorry, like yeah. I mean, part of me just wants to say, you know what, blow the whole thing up and let's start over.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? And then we can get to like solid ground mm-hmm. and then start something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like it that part makes sense to me. Instead of pretending, instead of denying, instead of living in some alternate universe, like mm-hmm. why not just say it out loud, guys?
Yeah. Well, they have, but their feeling is like, okay, we said it, let's move on. And but the way they've moved on, you can't move on from something like this without really processing it and dealing with it and living in your truth, which in my opinion, they aren't. And then you just pass it down to the next generation. And it may not be through sexual abuse, but it's through other forms of however you're coping with what happened to you. You're then parenting from that space, which is extremely horrible and toxic for your children.
Right.
And I just won't do that.
Right. We want health.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a good point. It's almost like a shell game or something. Like mm-hmm. you just move it to some, you know. I mean, I think that's true with so many things. I mean, the way people deal with trauma. Okay, I won't address this, but then I'm drinking or I'm you know, mm-hmm. or it comes out in affairs, or, you know, mm-hmm. this or that, that all of a sudden you're like, it always, it's like a whack-a-mole. It's going to pop up.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean.
Never goes away.
Yeah. That's, wow, what a powerful, what a big decision, and what a powerful decision and a courageous decision. So, from 15 until today, mm-hmm. you've been on a journey from when you talked to your mom. You came to Hollywood. We'll get into your career a little bit, but how do I say this? Like, if you're talking to trauma, you are mm-hmm. a lot of trauma survivors are yeah. going to read this, and that's wonderful. What is the message, or how could you summarize kind of a little bit of the message, the what you would advise somebody who's watching this right now or reading your book about dealing with their own trauma? What's helped you? I know you're still in process. We all are. But till today, from what you've learned, what would you say to that person?
The biggest thing that I learned when I started speaking my truth just out to people and friends and people that were in my life before I ever started writing was that I would say almost 100% of the people I confided in said to me, oh my God, I was abused by my dad. Oh my God, I was abused by my mom, my brother, my cousin, my neighbor. And that was everybody. And they would say to me, you're the first person I'm telling. Because no one's ever told me, and I finally feel safe, like you're yeah. a safe space that I can tell you that this happened. And it just made me realize how many people are affected by this and how many people stay silent because they don't want to upset the people in their family or their mother. And I just say, who cares?
Yeah.
Because you're not saving yourself, you're not helping yourself, and we can't change what happened to us, unfortunately. But we can change and write the future of our life and what that looks like. And that all lies within us speaking our truth and really living an authentic life.
Authenticity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a, like I said, naming. Like there's a power that comes with actually saying the truth. One of the hard parts, I think, can also be not only in a family dynamic, but just in a cultural. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not okay to not be okay, or mm-hmm. it's yeah. not okay, like that kind of thing. What have you done with that?
Well, nobody's okay.
Right, turns out. Isn't
turns
that
out.
The truth?
People. Yeah. Some people are just better at hiding it than other people. But we all have stuff, and we all have our traumas, big, small, whatever they are. And pushing it down, and Gabor says this all the time, my sister was severely depressed. Growing up, my older sister, and you know, his take on trauma, I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but his take on trauma and you know how it manifests in your body into illness and all the things is, when he speaks about depression, he says, you know, what does it mean to like depress, suppress things, push them down, don't talk about them, keep, you know, and that manifests in your body as depression, like ADHD and all the other things. So it makes me wonder how many kids are being diagnosed with certain things that are actually coming from just trauma that they've experienced in their life, and they're just having a normal reaction to an abnormal situation. And I feel like that's more common than people want to look at or realize, and most of the time because the trauma starts in the family and in the household. So for the parents to look at that, they have to look at themselves and what they did or didn't do. Not to be placing blame on anybody, but when we look at our stuff, we then don't pass it to our kids. You know, I mean, I still get triggered and have many feelings and thoughts, like as a parent with my daughter, but I can apologize to her, and I can realize when I'm in a dark space and I may be projecting things on her that have nothing to do with her, and I can say that to her, and I can, you know, say, mommy is having a hard time and mommy's struggling and I'm sorry and I didn't say the right thing or do the right thing. That was never something that was done right, for me as
right,
a kid.
Right.
So I think it's just really important that we start changing the narrative around all of that.
Right. I remember when we first had young kids, and I was asking kind of a mentor of mine, and I was saying, like, do you apologize to your kids? He's like, oh yeah, get ready to. And that was a good word early on to realize, you know, because also that's authentic. Mm-hmm. And kids, I think if they're raised in some kind of a museum where, like, nothing's talked about, there's no apologies, there's no authenticity, mm-hmm. it's awful.
Yeah.
Versus, yeah, I'm a person. Mm-hmm. Like, for your daughter, I just think it's going to work out beautifully. But for your daughter to see my mom, this horrible mm-hmm. thing happened to my mom, and she stood up and faced it and told the world and has helped thousands of people. She's a woman of courage. Mm. That's worth all the tea in China, you know? Yeah. Like that versus, I mean, I'm not trying to, if the sisters are watching, I mean, I'm not trying to beat you up, but I, you know, like versus like, let's just, oh no, it's going to hurt them. Well, no, this is a powerful thing, especially if you believe in redemption, mm-hmm. like I do. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe in God. I believe in redemption. I believe things can go from ashes to beauty, mm-hmm. you know? Like, so if you believe that, then let's get it all out and go for it, and let's stand tall, and let's apologize to each other and love each other and be in our truth, mm-hmm. real stuff, you know. Authenticity is a big thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's something I think people need to be encouraged to be brave. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's part of why you wrote the book.
That's exactly why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be brave.
Yeah.
And what a powerful life you can have, I think, at that point.
Yes.
It doesn't own you anymore.
No.
The secret stuff kind of owns you, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You keep it locked away under mm-hmm. the bed or under, like, it owns you.
It does. And it's interesting because there was a situation that happened in my family after I wrote the book. And it just speaks to exactly what I'm talking about when I'm saying that the trauma just passes down from generation to generation if you don't deal with it. I speak about in the book that something horrible happened to me on my communion. And my mom is fully aware of it. And she was over one day and she said, your sister asked for the communion dress, because we all wore the same dress. And so I had it pressed and I mailed it to her. And I was like, what? But this is what I'm saying. So you can say that you are aware that this happened, but if you're not dealing with it, which clearly they're not, because they were aware of the story, and then this is still happening. So she said, I sent the dress to your sister. And I said, well, you have to get that back, Mom. Like, do you not remember what happened to me in that dress? She said, oh gosh, I forgot. And it was like my world just like crashed down all over again, because, you know, me speaking out about what happened to me then again was not important. Then this is what was playing out in my family. This is how they were dealing with it. So I asked for my mom to get it back for me. I emailed my sister and I said, you know, something horrible happened to me in that dress. I really want it back. I want to burn it. And it took like 6 months. And my mom finally got it back and she came over to my house and it was wrapped up in a Starbucks like paper bag. And she just passed it to me and she said, here's your thing. And she left, and then I had my best friend over and my husband, and this is why I believe so much in chosen family, because my best friend knew everything that was going on. She said, I'm gonna take Capri, my daughter, I'm gonna take her to the playground and you do what you need to do. And my husband got a tank of gasoline and we went out on the lawn and he like put gas all over it and we burned it together. And that's my reality that I created, my truth reality. And they are not, unfortunately, as much as I wish it could be, it's just not what it is. And I will choose to burn my dress right. every day of the week.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, wow. So let's talk a little bit about the work you've done, just because I don't want to lose that. Like, it's an amazing thing you've done. And you've built some relationships in this world that are amazing as well. And I was seeing that the forward to your book and Cameron Diaz and these different, and there's been some encouragement, I think, in this project, in this mm-hmm. story. Tell us a little bit about that.
She knew about my abuse from, I was very vocal about it always. And when I met her, she was just this amazing person and just like this light that I was just extremely like drawn to. And I told her about my story very early on in our relationship. And, you know, now we've been friends for almost 20 years. But she was a huge part of me writing this book and sort of, you know, introduced me to HarperCollins because she had published a book with them. And so I, you know, sent my proposal to them, and then I asked her to write the foreword for it, which she did. And she was just a huge support to me and has been since the beginning with all of this.
How neat.
Yeah.
You don't hear about that side of Hollywood.
Yeah. She's a real one.
Yeah, isn't that amazing when you find a real?
Yeah.
So how do you survive in Hollywood, kind of? Like, what's the deal? How does that work?
You just keep your circle tight. You know, I mean, the stunt community is different than the actors. We're just a different world, and we're all really close. And I've been very blessed with the actresses that I work with that are just, you know, as normal. I mean, Cameron is as normal as they come. It's like, you know, for people that are, you know, enamored by all that, she's just a person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you met your husband. You were stunting for somebody, and he was stunting for Tom Cruise or something?
Yeah. Tom and I was Cameron.
And you were Cameron?
Yeah.
And that's how you met?
Yeah.
That's like a story right there.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you were married not long after that, and then now you have an 8-year-old.
Yeah. We met in 2009 on Night and Day, and then got married in 2012 and had her in 2014. She just turned 9. Yeah.
That's so great. Wow. So what is the, like, have you got hurt?
Sometimes, yeah. The beginning of the book talks about, and that kind of, I speak about an injury that happened in the very beginning of my career that was a pretty sufficient injury, and how I just sort of realized how much I was actually struggling emotionally, and kind of it was bleeding over into my stunt work. But yeah, I was on a descender on a wire, and they're supposed to like catch you 5 feet. I did a jump out a window, and they're supposed to catch you like 5 feet before you hit the ground. The line is, and mine didn't like work. And so I flew to the ground. Thankfully it was only 20 feet and it wasn't 90, cause it would have died.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah. Yeah.
Wow. No, I don't think I've ever really thought about that part of the movie world.
Yeah.
That you don't know about.
Yeah, we're a big part of it.
Yeah. Like, and you're going to keep doing this.
Me? Well, I mean, I've sort of like segued into coordinating, and my husband's directing now. So I, you know, I'm not working like I used to. I mean, it's literally been 20 years. So I've had a great career.
Yeah.
So I'm not doing things like I was, for sure.
Do you want to speak about this? Do you want to, what's your vision for this message and this whole thing?
I mean, right now I'm just trying to speak about it as much as I can. And yeah, I mean, I've spoken a little bit, like I've spoke with Gabor at a convention once, and I'm just gonna kind of see what happens. But yeah, I mean, eventually that's sort of the goal. And also I'm gonna make it a film.
Oh, you are?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That will be fun.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Kimberly Shannon Murphy has been the guest. The book is Glimmer, a story of survival, hope, and healing. I'm looking forward to reading the whole thing. And it's like I said, it's a courageous thing you've done. And,
thank you.
Thanks for telling the story.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, great to meet you. Kimberly Shannon Murphy, Glimmer. Folks, check it out. Harper & Collins is the publisher, I think. I encourage you to pick it up. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.